Allegro WIPR 91.3 FM presents Reflections, hosted by Jorge Gonzalez, a fresh new way to look at events with our well-being in mind.
Well, welcome to Reflections, your host Jorge Gonzalez. I hope you've had a good day. It's Thursday. Wish you a good day if it's a repeat program on Friday. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your feedback and any suggestions and some questions. Do you have the telephone number, 939-333-1010? And you can also access recordings of the program and make any comments, suggestions on my webpage, which is Reflections by Jorge Gonzalez .com. So, please visit that webpage. Let me know what you think. I wanted to start out with one of the sayings that comes out in El Nuevo Día, each day. This one's the 10th of March, and it's by Donatella Versace, the Italian designer. Creo que la autoconfianza es la cualidad más atractiva que una persona puede tener. I believe that the self-confidence is the quality, the most attractive quality that a person can have. And I agree. I think one of the things that we all have to have is self-confidence. And as we have discussed in the past, life is a question of balance. And so that self-confidence has to be tempered by reality as to where are the areas that you're not good at and admit to them and look for help in dealing with them. And also very important balancing with the very important value of humility. So that self-confidence, in order to really go forward in your life, whether it's in your business, your profession, dealing as a father, a mother, grandparent, a child, whatever in your life, you have to have that self-confidence to go forward, always tempered, always balanced. And that's what makes life interesting. It makes it challenging. The more I think about the personal values that are we have to live with and feel self-satisfied and at peace, which is my definition of well-being, the more I realize that it is this delicate balance of the different values that we have to keep in mind and go forward with. So self-confidence. Last week I mentioned that I didn't get to the topic of Iran. And to a certain extent, I'm kind of glad because it is a complicated topic, and there's so many aspects of it that I wanted to cover. And basically, it's a reflection to a great extent because back in 2013, my wife Pinky and I made a trip to Iran. And it was one of the more interesting trips that we've taken. And I wrote four articles, on that, regarding that trip, things that were interesting to me. And in the interim, there was an article today by Luis Aníbal Avilés, and he's a professor in the law school. He writes a lot and very well, and is at jugando pelota dura because he was I think the head of the board of the electrical authority, and so has some very strong opinions on everything that's happening with the electrical company. In fact, I'd like to have him here as a guest to go over those issues. But in this particular article, the title is El Vértigo del Siglo XXI, the vertigo of the 21st century. He starts it off by referring to a book by Philip Blom, B-L-O-M, The Vertical Years, Europe 1900 to 1914, before the First World War, and describing how things were so chaotic and things were so difficult to understand at that particular moment, disorientation, dizziness, and the people there knew that there was this chaos, but couldn't quite understand how to deal with it. And of course, it ended up dealing with the First World War. And he's saying that where we are now is in a similar situation. And it's chaotic, and it is chaotic, in so many different aspects. And you know, it basically ends up if we're not able to handle the demolition of things that we counted on, we're headed in the wrong direction. And he addresses this in terms of, to erase, and in terms of the United Nations and the policies that were developed there with the Security Council of the five countries, China, Russia, and all, with the veto power, and how that has been working relatively well over these many years. And then the alliances, you know, the NATO alliances, and to a great extent, respect for other countries' sovereignty and working in union when things happen. And that has all fallen apart. It's all falling apart. And it's a dangerous world. And that brings, of course, to mind. He doesn't mention, let's see, I don't think he mentioned that much about Iran, but it's pretty clear that that's what he's talking about. Unilateral attacks, Russia on Ukraine, and now Israel and the United States on Iran, and then the backlash on all of that is causing a lot of turmoil and all. And I look at Iran also from a reflective point of view of this trip. And the first article I wrote was Why Visit Iran, and because people were asking at that time. This was 2013, and things were not clear. It was still out there, not one of the countries that people felt comfortable visiting. We got involved because the Harvard Museum of Natural History has these trips, and the brochure of April 2013 had the itinerary for the Iran trip. And we had taken a trip with them to Vietnam, and were really very impressed with the way they undertake the trips. A lot of information before, books and articles that we should read. And then the people attending the trip, relatively sophisticated. You learn more from them, respect to what's happening there and in very many other areas. I remember, hearing about Bhutan, a place I had not, wasn't in my mind, and all these kinds of things. And then the guides there have local guides, and then they have international guides to help organize the trip, and it's relatively profound in terms of the culture, the architecture, the art, and the politics, and everything you really holistically would want to address with respect to a country, and especially a country like Iran and like Vietnam. It was a trip that we had taken there. It's 3 weeks, so it's they're long trips. Visit the country from top to bottom, from east to west, and in both of those cases, we were really interested in kind of understanding that particular culture. Vietnam, how it had resisted attacks by so many countries, including the most powerful in the world, including in Vietnam, the case of in the U.S. And Iran was similar to that, a very, very special, different culture that had resisted, being taken over by different entities. There had been that Iraq-Iran war. Over a million soldiers in Iran died from that attack by Saddam Hussein, who the U.S. helped and provided the chemical weapons that ended up being the reason why we attacked Iraq. But those are the ironies of life. But anyway, the most important thing is that we wanted to understand Iran and what made it click, and we had very little information. The Iran is what is left of what was the Persian Empire, which went from Greece all the way through India, over 2,500 years of history and architecture and all. So we wanted to understand the country. And what they will get into a little bit more detail, but Iran, there's a term that they use in Farsi, the language that they speak, and it's called Taruf, T-A, and then there's a little apostrophe, A-R-O-U-F, Taruf, and it's a special way of conversing and dealing culturally that we'll get into, but these kinds of nuances was what drove us to try to visit the Iran, and at that time, other than it was bounded with Iraq, how big was it? It ends up, Iran is as big as all of Europe. And at that time, it had 75 million. Now it's about 90 million. And it's, you have, besides Iraq, you have Afghanistan, Turkey, Pakistan, Armenia, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan as neighbors. So it's has a lot of neighbors surrounding, and then it's a country with deserts and mountains with snow, and it has lakes and rivers, and very very diverse in terms of its geography, and what we found is that very very proud people of the heritage that they had, and most importantly, and they were complicated people. I mean, yeah, but they were really, really friendly. We have not visited anywhere that it was as friendly and towards us. And like Vietnam, the people separate their position politically from government to government, or their government from themselves. That happened in Vietnam, and that happened in Iran. And they wanted, more importantly, they wanted to explain what their thoughts were and their feelings, and they wanted to know, what we thought about them, and they wanted to practice their English. There were many reasons why they would, come and start speaking with us and all. They were, no matter where you went, they would offer you tea. I remember one shocking moment where we went to buy some ice cream, and somebody completely next to us, we didn't know at all, paid for the ice cream that Pinky and I purchased, and just said, no, you're welcome. We thank you for visiting us. This is the kind of attitude that was really shocking. And it was sophisticated in the terms of the internet service. The roads were very good. The domestic airline and airports were very good. There was, you know, there was, in terms of its infrastructure at that time, it was in good shape. Right now, it probably is not, unfortunately. I think, you know, one of the, of course, the critical things we wanted to understand is the government organization, because you have elections for a president and you have a parliament, but then you have the Security Council and you have the Revolutionary Guard and you have the Ayatollah and the supreme leader and that theocratically controlled. So it's a combination of there is elections and there are, you know, 4, 5, 6 candidates. They have to be vetted, but they can be very different in their outlook, liberal and conservative. But there are elections, and presidents have campaigns and all that kind of thing. As I end the particular article, you know, discussing why we went to Iran. It says, in short, our initial reaction to visiting Iran would be highly interesting, proved to be absolutely correct. There was no regret in terms of anything that we experienced in Iran. That's the first article, explaining it. The second article, these kind of, at least I'm going to discuss, you know, in this chronology. I don't really recall whether it was the second, in terms of what I wrote, but it was titled "Dogs and Cats in Iran," and then it says that when one thinks of Iran, one of the first images is that of the Persian cat, that fluffy, somewhat fat and beautiful creature, which, like all cats, evokes the independent thinking, somewhat sly animal that some of us love, some of us hate, but all admire. And I said here, and this is a kind of a tongue-in-cheek article. It says, in Puerto Rico, we have the tradition of attaching names to politicians. Of course, now it's not also happening a lot in the States. Regardless of origin, by friend or foe, the image is adopted with pride. Hernandez Colón, el gallito que no se huye, the fighting cock that does not flee. Romero Barceló, el caballo, the horse. Acevedo Vilá, el alacrán que muerde, the scorpion who bites. Rivera Schatz, el tiburón blanco, the white shark. Now he's not really involved, but it was very, very important at that time. Marcos Rodriguez Emma, a good friend. El gato persa, the Persian cat. Now, we'll go into this tongue-in-cheek article, which has some important message when we come back, because we run out of time in this first segment. This is Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections.